T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
What percentage is $5 on 100?
Middays on the Score.
Five? I think it would be five. This is the Bernstein and McKnight Show, broadcasting live from Gallagher Way at Wrigley Field. Our top of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Your Chicago Wolves are up 2-0 over the Iowa Wild in the division finals. The series continues in Iowa and then back to Allstate Arena. Playoff tickets start at $15. Visit ChicagoWolves.com for the latest playoff information. You hear him on Hit and Run. On Sundays, Matt Spiegel, the baseball mind, has been prowling the hallways inside Wrigley Field. I guess a lot of meetings upon returning from the long road trip.
Yeah, hitters meetings and pitchers meetings as well. I would dare say that those players were pursuing their pregame endeavors with a sense of urgency.
Yes.
I would dare to say. But you know how, like, you want them, perhaps, or Theo wanted them, or they expressed their own desire in the offseason to take batting practice every day, to be on point. There is a sense of seriousness that was kind of inescapable as I was out there. Not a lot of glad-handing. And I know that Jed has made some comments that you guys have run with a little bit in terms of, you know, whether this is a measuring stick or not. But the Cardinals are the Cardinals, you know?
Yeah.
They were the enemy forever. They still are. The last 3 years, the Cubs have finished ahead of them. They knocked him out in 2015, and what we all remember was kind of felt like a turning point. The last 2 years, they've knocked the Cardinals out of the postseason race late in the season. So this is, it's actually a thing. It's not just in the fans' minds.
So
alone.
Before we get into some of these specifics of this, this has sort of been because of Theo and now Jed continuing to stamp meatball validations on things, like take things too seriously, overrate regular season games. You can pretend everything matters in a way that wouldn't otherwise be sensible.
You look at this division, tell me today might not matter on October 1.
Right, it does. But while we're doing this, because of what we talked about yesterday, we have to square this up. Did you see the Eno Saris Driveline Athletic study regarding where hitters are making contact with the baseball?
Yes.
Their data, science is suggesting
they're barreling it like crazy.
They're barreling it because they're getting it earlier. They are now. So if indeed,
I will never tire of spiking this conversational ball from 2011.
If indeed this is objective scientific confirmation,
it has caught up
of swinging earlier,
yes,
meaning
sir.
Both launch angle and barrel.
Yes,
that would completely justify your side of the long running argument.
Take a lap, Matt.
You know, that's the thing, Connor. I heard Bernsey reference Jose Bautista in the question to Coomer today. And I'm like,
Went out of my way to do it.
Here we are.
Did it for a reason.
Because at the time in Toronto, it was the hitting coach Dwayne Murphy and Jose Bautista who transformed his career by having him swing earlier. And he began to pull everything and elevate everything. And of course, everybody pointed to roids, and it was left to jamokes like me and Joe Posnanski to say, couldn't it possibly be true? Couldn't it just be a guy that improves? And it turns out that everybody is now kind of caught up to that. But I love Bernsey's point that, like, finally, science is here to validate it. Because Lord knows,
right.
Lord knows you can't trust people.
Speculation? Conversation?
No.
Coaching?
No.
None of those things.
If it's not data, it doesn't exist.
You're damn right. Yeah, absolutely.
If it's not
right.
Scottish, it's crap.
I remember those conversations that you guys were having during those shows. And I remember thinking back, like, yeah, no, it does make sense. Like, the leg kick helps,
right?
And then all along comes Josh Donaldson.
Yes,
there are a number of hitters that are out on that front foot, and there are now, like, there are so many more swings shaped like his.
Yes.
And not even in swing path, not even in that. I'm talking body setup and the look. Look at Bryce Harper.
The whole mindset.
And the way he fires at
absolutely.
That baseball.
And I think Donaldson, that moment when Donaldson explained it to Mark DeRosa, was it, on MLB Network.
Maybe the best and most informative 5 minutes on that network for this era of baseball. And
if people were watching that and now are reading the data, or whichever one, like that, I feel like was the anecdotal moment where everybody was like, okay, I get it. And maybe if Jose Bautista had been that eloquent, that willing, and given that, you know, that platform dissertation like that, that platform at the time, it might have been a different conversation. But it makes all the sense in the world. And that's why, and also like you guys all know, it's management's willingness to accept the strikeouts and management's willingness to accept the 240 hitter who hits 30 bombs. And that's why we're where we are, for better and for worse.
What's your insight into the always fascinating Kyle Hendricks? I can't ever tire of talking about him, because talking about him is talking about pitching.
Yeah, and it shouldn't work as long as it has. It shouldn't feel dependable as it does for them to invest in him because of the velocity. But A, he's brilliant and is as on point with execution and game plan as anybody you will ever find. And so there's that. B, when he locks in with his repeatability of his mechanics, his control is beyond anybody's. Here's what's interesting to me is that two starts ago against the Diamondbacks, Theo and Jed were over the moon after that start because they were saying he's got it. He figured it out. Every year he struggles early to kind of find the comfort level. He's not a guy who can tweak it in the middle of a game and find it, which I think is a little bit of a window into why Joe has the quick hook with him sometimes. Because they don't believe from the top on down that he can make that adjustment necessarily within a game. But between starts, yes. So he figured it out. He dominates Arizona, strikes out 11, and then the next time it's Arizona again, and they ambushed him. I believe he still hasn't figured out. It's Arizona said, okay, that's what you're going to do. And now he's got to go next level if he believes the Cardinals have scouted that particular two-game span.
It's like an NBA playoff series.
Right?
Right.
It's exactly what
it is. You're going to bring this guy out and screen roll. I'm going to defend him with this guy, and now your turn.
Right. And so that's why I thought what Coomer said to you made all the sense in the world. Go right at them early. Not just, go right at them inside. Go try to make them uncomfortable. I wouldn't be surprised to see him go off the plate and end up in a couple 2-0 counts just because he's thinking they're going to ambush him. But they feel good about where he is mechanically, and that's the most important thing.
Yeah, for him it seems that way. Is that something that you think can change even as a guy gets older and craftier? I mean, we're seeing John Lester pitch the way he has and adapt some, maybe not so much in start, but definitely from year to year. If Hendricks is going to get ambushed, like you said, 0-2, he's given up some big-time contact and some big-time power this season.
Yeah.
Then it seems to me he is going to have to find some way of tweaking things within a start once you find out, oh, this is first pitch swing, or this is, oh, my changeup doesn't matter today.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and tweaking within a start in terms of pitch selection or game plan, I think he can do, and perhaps should have done more in the last start with Arizona. It's tweaking mechanics and release point and finding it that way within a start.
Yeah.
That they don't believe he can do within a start, that he's not that guy. So that's why they're willing to punt early every once in a while.
I'd love to know what the contribution and role is of Wilson Contreras in some of this stuff, because we knew when it was David Ross, we knew when it was when others were involved, you had more experience there to draw on, you had all the ability to communicate, and while Wilson's just been mashing the baseball and does say that the defense, the receiving is more important to him, they don't have that resource now as an everyday person actually seeing all these pitches.
No, they don't, but they have Hadavi now in there. So that your brain trust is Hadavi, Borzello, Contreras, and all the pitchers. And so Contreras is in on all those meetings, and I think he always has, but like anybody, it's a matter of his intention and attention to detail. And that particular thing they've been praising. They've been praising his involvement in the game planning and the execution.
You mentioned the idea of getting it, of a player understanding he's getting it. Some do it more intellectually, some do it more instinctively.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a tweet from Matthew Trueblood yesterday of Prospectus, noting that while Javier Baez has not had any of his hardest hit balls of his career this year, he has had more exit velocities of 100 miles an hour already this year than he has in other years put together.
That's great. So it's consistency of hard contact.
It's jumped.
It's not explosive career high hard contact.
Right.
But he said this is he has now controlled his immense talent enough to weaponize it.
Do you agree? Yeah, that makes all the sense in the world. That's why average exit velocity is a great thing to look at, not just, oh, remember that time he hit it hard. But also, that's why so much of the data has been miscast as, metrics, and this is what... It's quantifiable scouting. It's the same stuff that scouts have been trying to say for decades. Oh, he's hitting the ball a lot harder now. Yeah, you see him this year, he's really hitting the ball hard.
Love the way it's coming off his bat.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Or like, look how locked in, look how he's staying back, you know, or look at it's just stuff that you can measure now and makes people sound like scouts have always wanted to sound.
It gets scouts fired is what it does.
Well, but I don't know that it should. I don't know that it should as much as, you know, you used to have to weed out the bad scouts by figuring out if a guy actually knew his stuff. I think you can weed out some of the bad scouts now because they don't know what the hell they're talking about, and they haven't done the research to kind of align with what they're talking about.
You've still got to do the work to get the guy in the right position to get it done. I mean, Kinetrax is doing some of that stuff, like actual body positioning and how best to get the barrel to the ball, so to speak, but you're still going to have that from actual human beings. You're still going to have that kind of, well, it's coaching, I guess. It would make sense.
It is.
It's coaching.
It is. And this mental skills department, now with the addition of Bob Tewksbury, I think is six deep at the major league level. And that's a lot. That's a lot. And then they have a whole bunch at the minor league level because the game is hard.
Market inequity. That's what they're obviously looking at. As a place where there's untapped value.
Train the brain.
Right, absolutely. And you know that a lot of guys need different hitting coaches or different hitting styles, different hitting conversations. A lot of guys need different sort of mental coaches. You ever cycle through a few therapists in your day? Anybody? Just me? Okay. But, you know, like that stuff matters. Bryant is the one I keep thinking about. Bryant, in terms of focus and sort of accessibility, he's not doing a whole lot of other media other than what he's doing because he has struggled, and he has struggled mentally in a game that, by his words a couple of weeks ago, he said, you know, you think the longer you play this, the less pressure there's going to be. And that is just not the way it works, even for somebody as strong as him.
Konerko used to talk about that all the time.
Absolutely.
All the time, no matter what. The guy's a borderline a Hall of the Very Good for a long time. You know, who knows? You put Harold in the Hall of Fame, but he even when he was going great in an MVP conversation, seemed so tormented.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think Bryant is still feeling tormented, even though he is squaring the ball up and hitting it awfully hard with consistency.
What are you allowing yourself to dream when it comes to Tyler Chatwood?
Boy, I am dreaming of high leverage late innings without a doubt.
I'm dreaming of high leverage late innings. Yeah, did he go off the ground?
He is, you know, because remember, he talked about the specifics of how he can lock in mechanically and did so for a while this year in the spring. And he's like, I was talking to Zach Zabin upstairs because Zach had that long conversation with him in the spring. And Tyler, if you're watching now, every once in a while, will do this thing. He's on the mound and he'll slap himself. And he's slapping himself to kind of lock back in.
Yeah.
Because he knows what he's supposed to do, but sometimes he gets a little out of whack. And he's talked about it where, like, he leans towards third base a little bit and, like, part of his body's going that way. So just pay attention. Every once in a while you see him smack himself in the leg. And he's, like, trying to, like, smack his body back into its comfort zone.
It's like us on the golf course.
Yes.
Stay down, idiot. Uh-huh. Don't blade this over the green.
Sure.
Yes.
Sure. So he's doing that, and he's such a... He's such a liked guy. He's such a liked guy within that clubhouse. So, you know, some guys, if you're struggling and you're not trustworthy, guys are like, get him the hell out of here. And some guys, you're like, boy, I want him to figure it out. Come on, Tyler, how you doing? Come on, how you doing? So I'm allowing myself to dream big. And you know what? They need his swing and miss stuff, as you know.
It's interesting that you bring it up that way because although these guys are tied to contracts and it would be difficult to move them anyway, but since 2015... This clubhouse, as it's been constructed in the front office too, has allowed players to struggle, figure their stuff out, and have an infrastructure around them. I mean that from like a uniform player's perspective too.
Uh-huh.
You think about Jason Hayward. wasn't good for 2 years. Immensely respected by everybody in there.
Absolutely.
And allowed to work that way.
Absolutely.
Chatwood, as you kind of put it, seems similar. I wouldn't, you know, put him in the same category or anything, but
how about Schwarber?
That's critical. That is of critical importance to building a long-term success.
Yeah, Schwarber with different periods of that, including getting sent down, but they all saw his work ethic. They knew him and believed him, and it's that way with Hap. You know, they love Hap as a kid.
Yeah.
So if Hap has a, you know, comes back and seems to have taken everything the right way. And it, as you know what, Lester went and sought out Hap after he got sent down and said,
right,
hey, man, let's talk, you know, not just letting him go away. So, yeah, it's interesting to think of that kind of stuff as market inefficiency. But it really is. All right, what can we do with togetherness? What can we do with support that perhaps other teams are not doing? And will it matter one day out of a buck 62?
It's so much of it. It's almost a literal application of the Epsteinism, what don't we know?
Mm-hmm.
When you ask psychologists, what don't we know? Almost all of it. It's almost all voodoo at this point. And the moment you think you can figure out something, even psychiatrists, even when it comes to literal brain chemistry about why certain drugs work, don't know.
What's the big book? The big book of official diagnoses?
DSM.
The DSM. It changes every year.
Yep.
They're changing the way that they talk about and treat bipolar disorder.
Like, oh, that's not a disease anymore.
Yeah.
It's not.
Oh, yeah. But wait. So that thing where we diagnosed, yeah, we were wrong about that.
Yeah, we don't call it that anymore.
It's like the way these guys talk about pitching. They don't know what the hell they're doing. They're just trying.
It's and also, the fact that the Cubs are so, most guys are so open about it, and the way they've made that part of the process, that it's okay to talk about. Like, we talked about the way Matt Nagy said, don't talk around the Cody Parkey thing. Go ahead, mention it. It's okay.
Yeah, it happened.
Yeah. We can all talk about it.
Put it out there.
It seems like the Cubs' approach to a lot of this stuff is a willingness to discuss the way they think about things rather than keeping it secret as if somehow something's going to, some fragile thing will break if they discuss it.
I agree. And that's why when it comes to items of seriousness, like the Addison Russell stuff, when Theo talks about it, the way they talk about it, when the organization talks about it, I know that at the very least there is a level of therapeutic commitment to the truth and to like looking at it honestly. You know, I'm not saying that everything is sincere in terms of, you know, pure desires of wanting to do right. I mean, he's an asset, and they've made the decision to keep the asset. But they're not going to BS how they think about it internally, because they know if a guy's screwed up, a guy's screwed up. And they know how you have to work on that to be less screwed up.
I would imagine that some of that insight, some of that search for support, some of the search for, you know, mental health, all that kind of stuff, it's all played into how they've tried to go after and attack the issue of Addison Russell, of domestic violence, of that that societal issue within their own organization, within their own business.
I just don't know how Addison deals with things like that, you know, and whether Addison is open to looking at the world and himself like that. And I'm not sure that they know just yet.
Sure. I would almost say, how could you? I don't mean to sound flippant like that, but in a process like this, how could you? It's such a personal and intense discovery of oneself, and you've got to be doing it every single day.
Right, and if anything, Addison has had more missteps in how he has framed it vocally and how he has talked about his own accountability vocally. If anything, there's been that there's been more missteps than correct steps from him. I would say.
Are you noticing anything different, any different feel in the clubhouse, especially with urgency being one thing? Is when you were introduced, you talked about how this felt a little bigger, and it's okay, and it should.
Yeah.
But when Theo and Jed said they'd be around more, when they said Joe needs to coach a little bit harder, is there any noticeable dynamic difference just from your observations?
You know, I haven't noticed it in terms of how players are dealing with Theo and Jed. I will say with Joe, it's just so obvious and so palpable how much more connected he is with hitters, especially. Listen to the way he talks about Bryant or Schwarber or anybody who has struggled and come out of it. As he talks about it in a random pregame, it is so much more specific. And it is also so much more confident because he's in there and he knows and he's paying attention. He gives a crap. And I got to think that has, you know, some sort of a effect on guys knowing he's involved, because that's what they wanted. That's what they wanted. Remember at the beginning of Joe's run where Casper used to describe him as a 61-year-old college student? He's curious and he's interested and he's always kind of looking for that next thing. I don't know how much he was that guy over the last couple of years, but I think he's back to being that guy
now. I was also wondering, too, as much as we were very quick to say that this is Anthony Rizzo's clubhouse, we always say he's the position player with the most gravitas. I would hope that while it shouldn't necessarily be tied to the quality of one's play, Jason Hayward absolutely being, when Coomer was talking about Paul Goldschmidt, he referred to Goldschmidt as an adult baseball player.
Uh-huh.
And if you're really looking for a mensch in the clubhouse, for a real grown-up in the clubhouse, we know what it meant in the seventh game of the World Series. But I would hope an offshoot of his newfound success is an increased role for Jason Hayward.
Well, what's interesting is I don't even think he needed it in order to have that sort of gravitas and presence. Connor, as you were saying before, like how the team looks at certain guys as long as they're trying and they're working on it, etc. And remember that Hayward had that garbage-ass year in 2016, but he still had the confidence to bring those guys together in the weight room in those 18 minutes. And they had the smarts to listen and kind of allow him to take that leadership role. Doesn't success be damned, but if anything, I'm sure it's emboldened by the fact that you hang around for a couple years and things start going your way again.
Since we have you, the host of Hit and Run, I want to run some baseball things by you. Hall of Fame conversation. We were debating how many active Hall of Famers there are in baseball now. Let me give you a quick list. You can shoot them down. You can add a couple in.
He's
stop me whenever you like.
13 on his list. I had 10.
Trout, Votto, Kershaw, Scherzer, Pujols, Verlander, Cabrera, Felix Hernandez, Yadi Molina, CC Sabathia. Robinson Cano is in, though steroids will probably keep him out for some undetermined time, but that is a Hall of Famer.
Greinke.
Greinke
get close?
Greinke. I think Greinke.
Well, I mean, look, and Greinke's doing it with diminished stuff. Now, let's see how long he goes.
It's like, yeah,
Zach Greinke
Felix
has the fourth highest active wins above replacement total at 67.
Yeah. Some monstrous years there, and a guy who again is so damn smart, and it seems to be making that Felix adjustment.
And tormented.
Yes. Oh, seriously. Yeah. Tormented. Oh, yeah. Yes, and medicated, and all of that. So Greinke, I ask you, and then it's not too early for some of those guys.
Trout's in.
Trout's beyond in.
So where are you on Sabathia?
I think Sabathia's in. So I think he gets there. I think it'll be some time. I think it's, but if you look at the way this era of starting pitching is going to have the lens kind of changed on it a little bit.
Absolutely.
Sabathia is going to stand out as one of the last of his kind.
Yeah,
that matters. That's important.
The way that eventually Mussina worked his way up the conversation,
yep.
Sabathia might. I mean, I think I heard you guys talking the other day. He's very, very possibly the last left-handed pitcher ever to get to 3,000 strikeouts.
Yep, unless Kershaw's remarkably healthy.
And he's already
breaking down.
That's not going to happen. You know, in talking to talked to a Dodgers guy a couple weeks ago, Bill Plunkett of Orange County Register. Is like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, he said, no, that Kershaw's gone. So that guy's gone. He's just gone. And so now he's looking at the Frank Tanana portion of his career when the heater is gone and you're converting to Frank Tanana of Tigers.
Tigers
years.
Frank Tanana.
Exactly.
He's got to find another breaking ball if he wants to be.
And he might.
Yeah. I wouldn't put it past him.
Yeah. I wouldn't put it past him, but I don't know. I don't know that he's ever had the reputation for work ethic and concentration of, say, Greinke. You know, I don't know. I think Kershaw has been able to do it more on stuff.
He's got the reputation for intensity.
Yeah, but I don't know I don't know if he's got the reputation
for full-on
concentration and execution. It's difficult, man. You know how difficult it is.
Speaks, thanks. It's really fun.
A pleasure, guys.
Hit and Run Sunday. What do you got coming?
It's Cardinals weekend, so St. Louis afternoon radio stalwart Chris Ranji is
going to join me.
Yeah. And we will be sure to play him not just the first flush, but the second flush from Jim Bowden's appearance on Inside the Clubhouse a few weeks ago.
When we last had him on, we played him the...
Ned Colletti?
Yes.
No, it was...
Gaseous Passions?
Alan Nero.
Yeah. Oh, Alan Nero, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
We had another one from Inside the NBA that is probably in the system. Rick Campbell, let you know where it is.
Yeah, no, I heard Ronji with you guys, and he was broken. Because Inside the Outhouse is very dependable for that kind of content.
Oh.
All right, guys.
pleasure.
Matt Spiegel, brought to you by International Champions Cup. Get ready for soccer's first tournament of the year, July 16th. Catch the International Champions Cup as AS Roma battles Chivas de Guadalajara right in their own backyard at SeatGeek Stadium. Get tickets at SeatGeek.com today. I want you to picture something. Picture a bang-bang play at second base where maybe a guy's hand got in before the tag or maybe it didn't. And one of the guys jumps up and he gets the call and he points to the dugout. He's like, review it. And the psychology behind that, there is now a study where it has been determined why in sports, in these moments, why we think we're right. We know now.
Why we think we're... So what? I'm right and you're wrong, and you're right and I'm wrong?
Correct, and we're both founded in what we think. We're both believing this for real reasons, actual physiological reasons that are informing why in sports we react to things the way we do. A study has been done.
I don't usually like staring inside myself and finding out things, but that's where we're headed next. It's a terrifying time. Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
Bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Your Chicago Wolves are up 2-0 over the Iowa Wild in the division finals. The series continues in Iowa, then back to Allstate Arena. Playoff tickets start at $15. Visit ChicagoWolves.com for the latest playoff information. Connor, from you, I need a single-digit number.
Show me four.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Caller four to the contest line. The contest line.
Gotta be the contest line.
312-591-6700. Wins dinner for Cinco. That's five guests at Chewy's Tex-Mex restaurants. Your official Cinco de Mayo headquarters with locations in Orland Park, Warrenville, and the Schaumburg location that will feature you.
Yeah,
it
should
Connor.
Be a fun day on Sunday from noon until 2. You can come out to 1701 East Gulf Road in Schaumburg. You hang out at Chewy's Tex-Mex. We're going to be there for Cinco de Mayo. Be a wonderful time. They brought food by the station yesterday, had the chicken, had the steak, and the, what was it, was the jalapeno ranch.
Yeah.
Sauce.
Yeah.
I don't often go for a ranch anything. I had some of this and ended up drenching everything in it. It's fantastic. Looking forward to it.
All right, check this out. These are psychologists at Arizona State University. This was in the San Jose Mercury News, reprinted in the Tribune, and they've determined something. They have identified what may be a principal cause of arguments in ball games.
In ball games, baseball games specifically?
Not specific to baseball.
Any game containing a ball.
It works actually thinking basketball particularly, but you can you can imagine moments in football, hockey, wherever it may be.
No, notably, it does not work in hockey where fights are settled by actual fights.
Here's why. We mentally register our own sensations before whatever else is around us. All right, stay with me here. When our brain expects to feel something, it senses it 50 milliseconds before it perceives an unexpected external physical sensation.
What?
It's sort of like these...
It's like a precognition thing?
Yep, exactly. So if two players hit a ball, like say basketball, nearly simultaneously, they will have different understandings of the experience. As a result, things can turn quickly divisive. If, say, possession of a ball knocked out of bounds is awarded to the player who wasn't the last to touch it. It's complicated. It has to do with anticipation and the time it takes surprising sights and sounds to travel to our brain. So here's what they say. When we're anticipating a sensation created by our own actions, we perceive it in real time. In contrast, there's a delay when our brains register an action that is unexpected. So think of you're a player sliding into a base.
Yeah.
Head first slide. Yep. Your hand is there. You are anticipating feeling that base. And then all of a sudden, the unexpected, a sweep tag coming in by a leaping Javier Baez who's slapping it right down on your butt. You're not... And then you get up. You're like, I'm safe. Review it.
Right.
And you're wrong simply because of the speed at which you perceived the separate events.
This actually, it explains a lot. Because part of this, as I'm hearing you read this, part of this has to do with expectations, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're involved in an event about which you have expectations. So it would stand to reason then that if you're a professional ball player who's hit that ground ball to short that many times, And you kind of know when it comes off the bat that, that one I'm not beating out. I'm not getting there for that one. You don't
I've
have
seen
the
that
argument.
One before.
But right? In like a beer league softball game or a Sunday morning church basketball game, those are the games that devolve into argument for hours at a time because people just aren't playing all that often. Well, so they've got an expectation of what happens like in the driveway or in batting practice or actual success. But what's actually happening is that you suck and the other guy's better than you and he tagged you.
And here's how they tested it. They revealed the finding through timing games with dozens of students at Arizona State. Each pair of volunteers sat across from each other at a table. They touched a sensor on the other person's hand in response to a flash of light. And students asserted, "I touched first," between 67 and 75% of the time, which is mathematically impossible.
Okay.
And they had three different games using three different ways of doing this, and you had to be honest about whether or not you thought you touched first. And because you are assuming, and because you are perceiving your action first, you are thinking you are right. And that's what I'm thinking with these finely trained athletes. And this is, there had already been studies done about umpires calling out at first, why people don't perceive the out at first to be an out. And that's because they're further away and they don't hear the ball hit the glove.
Sure.
And the idea that most umpires are looking at the base and listening for the glove.
Yeah.
You know, and that's been studied. And we know that. But this is the first time it's anything that you don't expect. It's a guy about to going or lunging for a ball near the boundary and somebody else's hand comes in. You're probably wrong about when a certain thing happens.
So does this get us closer to removing part of the human element of a game? I mean, if you've got essentially what happens and a diagnosis for how two humans interact with an unexpected event, then you've got more argument, right? You would have then more argument for just going to the tape for more instances?
I don't know, but the 219 is asking, does ego play in, overestimating one's own ability, assuming I have a higher chance of being successful than you do?
I know that for a fact. Yeah,
There's no way that guy's going to tag me out.
Absolutely, right? Ego plays into it. Are you kidding me? You can go to any softball game where somebody played like D3 college and maybe somebody else makes a decent play on him. That guy's never been out in all summer long, and he's not out this time either because he's better than you are. Ego plays.
Yeah, it's cool when it's that infinitesimal a difference that makes us that sure of ourselves. It is a time difference that's so small we can't even perceive it, but it becomes that real a difference in how we actually interpret the timing of the action.
It's amazing that the brain begins to think before the event happens.
Right.
50 milliseconds? I mean, you know, that's not a lot of time. It's a millisecond, but it feels like that would be a lot of time, really, for your brain to cook something together before the event actually
happens.
You
know, it
happens.
Sounds cool. To me like the guys...
Cool.
The guys I know who trade for a living, guys who run trading desks, where they're going to these, like, straight-line microwave shots to communicate market data, because if you can get, for high-volume algorithmic trading, if you get the information of what the markets are doing that much quicker in just the tiniest blink, what the computer programs can do in the hundredths of cents to arbitrage it turns into millions of dollars.
They're using microwaves on the trading floor?
Well, no. They're getting...
just got cocaine out of the trading floor, and now it's like, well, that's not enough. Here's cancer. Just a bunch of microwaves beaming around.
Right, no, that was the shrimp with the cocaine. The 312 says, it makes me think managers should second guess going to review based on the player's bias toward their expectation. Yeah, that's why I brought it up. That's why I brought it up. When you see, I always used to say, oh, that guy looks really sure of himself.
And it was
a player you trust. There's no way he let them burn a challenge right here. Or in football, you know, there's no way that guy would think that was interference because he knows how valuable their timeouts are. When in fact, his certainty is absolutely real, but now this tells us not to necessarily trust that player's certainty as much.
That would be a great question to ask Joe Maddon when he's done with his like managerial career, because he said when it's Javi, you trust him, right? When it's Javi, you give him the benefit of the doubt. I guarantee you there's been a player in his day or on his teams where if he slid in, oh no, that guy's full of crap. Don't trust him at all. He's always out. Don't challenge the thing. He's always lying.
This is a really fun day today. We have plenty of thank yous. So you want to thank Jonah Carey for joining us. Ron Coomer and Matt Spiegel also sat down with us.
Yeah, don't miss Hit and Run on Sunday. It's going to be Spiegs and some dude named Chris Ranji.
Rich Wyatt was our engineer. Jay Zawoski, our executive producer. Rick Camp on the board. The executioner, Ray Diaz, in the back. Thanks also to the Budweiser Brickhouse Tavern for bringing over their fabulous food. Wonderful, wonderful stuff. And have a great Cinco de Mayo. Go out and see Connor on Sunday.
Chewy's
at
Chewy's
in Schaumburg. Thanks to all the Cub fans and Cardinals fans that stopped by to say hello and putting faces to the names of fans of the show. Have a wonderful weekend and enjoy Cubs-Cardinals. Game one of the three-game series next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.